Does Proverbs help us understand whether and when? There might be times when one should actually pick a fight. Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson. We continue our series on the book of Proverbs, and we'll be focusing on Proverbs 17 to 19 today. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Linda Emerson, Assistant Professor of Philosophy. So, should we ever pick a fight?
Yes.
Whoa.
Alden, I want to commend you for your use of language that it's a little bit edgy. Pick a fight.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like we're going to go to blows with fisticuffs. You know, and I would have voiced this in a slightly softer way.
Okay.
You know, that are there sometimes when you ought to confront wrong? But pick a fight is more graphic, and it has a lot more energy than confronting wrong.
So I would say yes. I would say yes to that question too.
Was very interesting, Dave. You said I want to commend you,
and then I picked a fight.
And then he did something else, didn't he? Well, so I don't care how you phrase the question. I guess I'll impetuously respond yes.
To what now? That you ought to pick a fight.
Sometimes we ought to confront a wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes, often we ought to confront wrongs.
You know, I lived at a house years ago where the bedroom was upstairs, and one day I heard some children squabbling, and I looked out the window, and here was a fairly large-sized boy following behind two girls, the smaller of whom was less than half his size, and he was stepping on the back of her shoes and causing her to stumble and fall, and she kept protesting, and he kept laughing and doing it. And all of a sudden, the middle-sized girl turned around, and she, to use our colloquialism, she got in his face.
Mm-hmm.
She stepped right up into his personal space, and she stuck her finger up under his chin and told him off. And it was marvelous. He backed up about three steps, you know, and he could have just gone squish to her. That to me is the quintessential illustration of the fact that when wrong is being done, there is a time when anger is righteous, and that was one time. And you know, I have to tell you that an angry person is a very, very challenging to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
That's especially true if a man has to deal with an angry woman. I say that men are ill-equipped to deal with angry women.
Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
There's a great line from a novel, short story actually, by Graham Greene, and he quotes a woman and said, in her experience, it was only when a man became angry that he told the truth.
Very interesting.
Well, anger does take down those inhibitions, see, because, I mean,
It overrides your, maybe your common sense in some cases.
Well, it overrides your fear of conflict, see, because we're all afraid of conflict instinctively because we know if it gets out of control, then it wreaks havoc.
Mm-hmm.
And so you all do this kind of cost-benefit analysis. Shall I argue with Linda or not? No, I don't think I will.
Yeah, I don't know. She looks like she might get a little bit hot, angry. I don't know if that's a good idea.
But if we're brave enough and strong enough, when somebody does lose control, we need to listen very carefully because they're telling us something.
Yeah, they are telling us something.
We would not know otherwise.
Yeah, and having answered yes to both of those questions, I think we have to be very careful about when we choose to pick a fight or to confront a wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a person who's pretty motivated for social justice.
Yeah. So when you see wrong being done, it doesn't sit well.
No, it doesn't sit well.
And almost at a visceral level, you're
I mean, it's almost as though I intuitively am experiencing the pain of injustice that person is experiencing, even though really,
it's not,
in a physical way, it isn't possible for me to do that.
Yeah.
But I guess I feel strongly that those of us who can have a moral and a spiritual imperative to stand up for those who cannot stand up for themselves.
Yeah,
it's not okay to victimize people.
At the risk of telling a story on myself, I have a friend who, because of health problems, was no longer able to work, and he was improperly dismissed by his employer and left with no retirement and no health benefits.
Yeah.
And I happened to visit him. He lives a long way from here in a different state. And one day I just happened to be going by and I went to visit him. I was so angry about that that I went to the headquarters office of that organization as a stranger, and I asked to see the person who is in charge of personnel. Mm-hmm. And I, in a very calm way, told him off.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have done a lot more, except my friend said, please don't, because it would just make my life more difficult. But I still, you know, and what surprised me was that my anger was so selfless,
yeah,
and so deep, mm-hmm, that I did not care who I met that day. Mm-hmm. In that office, I was, mm-hmm, going to have, right, a say in behalf, yeah, of that friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And I was angry, not red in the face, blowing, yeah, off steam, mm-hmm, angry, but it was an anger that manifested a serious determination that, mm-hmm, I am not going to sit, mm-hmm, quietly while that goes, mm-hmm, on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It, almost like you can't sit quietly.
Yeah. It would be wrong
it
to
would
sit
be
quietly.
Wrong, yes. It would be wrong for, yeah, me to sit quietly and allow this to happen.
Did it make any difference?
Very modestly. He did get a phone call from headquarters, and they did something for him. But he and his problem is resolved now, because he's over, he's 65 now, and he can get on government assistance. Yeah. But I mean, for 10 years, he lived from hand to mouth. My wife and I actually sent him a little bit of money one time to help him out. But I mean, the wrongness, is that a good word? The wrongness of that is so brazen that, mm-hmm, it cannot be left unchallenged. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, there's,
mm-hmm,
a flip side to this. You know, I'm, mm-hmm, amazed at what anger can actually achieve.
Yeah.
You know, that when you show up on somebody's door and, mm-hmm, they know that you're there to do business.
Right.
And it's not self-serving. You know, when we get angry for ourselves,
right,
it becomes very dangerous.
That's very dangerous. That's right.
And nursing anger is very destructive. And I like what it says in the New Testament that, you know, you should not let the sun go down on your anger. Don't nurse it, mm-hmm, you know. And it's possible to sin very egregiously when angry. Anger is not the loss of control.
And that same passage says, do not let the sun go down on your anger.
Yeah,
mm-hmm,
yeah. Don't nurse it. Don't keep, yeah, it around. Yeah. It'll consume you.
Yeah.
But I'm amazed at how sometimes when you get angry, you can achieve, you can undo injustices that a quiet conversation would never, yeah, undo.
But shouldn't we say that as a first principle, we ought to try to work in private before we go public?
Oh, sure.
I think so. And I also think that we ought to try to work calmly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we ought to, not that when we possess this sort of selfless, kind of other motivated, deeply felt anger, that we can't be calm, but we ought not to be angry in the self-destructive way.
Yeah.
We ought to, before we even get to the anger point, as we observe injustices, work constructively. You know, without getting going to that angry place,
see, the blow up kind of anger actually does bring about change, but it does because the other people freak out and say, "I don't know what to do." So it doesn't fix the systemic problem.
That's it. Yeah. That's the thing. And sometimes, you know, I think sometimes we find ourselves kind of unexpectedly in these situations that require kind of a twofold resolution. The first is we have to stop what's going on right now. Like in the case of child abuse, for instance, Child Protective Services in certain situations, and the police simply must go into a home
and stop what
is happening. But the long-term care of the family, you know, keeping the family together, the children in abused homes, as you said a few years ago, really want to stay in their homes if they can. These kids don't want to be in foster care or group homes, and we really don't want that for them. So the thing we really need to do then over the longer term is work systematically to resolve the problem or the deeper problem.
I think anger should show up as assertiveness, not as loss of temper.
It sounds wise.
Yeah, all of us know when somebody has come intending to do business.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a friend who went to a hotel once to discover that they had given away his reserved room.
Mm-hmm.
And he discovered that they had had a crowd of people come in, and it was more expedient for them to take this crowd in and take his room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty sure there were some rooms available, but they were not going to give it to him. So he simply said, when he discovered what had happened by talking, he discovered all these things. He said, mm-hmm, to the clerk or whatever, "Well, I understand you've taken my room. I had a reserved room." And he says, "I'll tell you what." He says, "I'm simply going to go out to the lobby, and I have my pajamas with me. I will settle it on the couch for the night because I had a reserved, and it was by now it was like 11 o'clock and I was too late.
Says, yeah, what am I going to do?
So he says, you may expect to find me there. And he said, within minutes
he had a room.
But
they knew that he was not going to be denied.
Right.
When I saw the topic for our, and it's clear that we could go for several more hours on this, but what I did in Proverbs 17 and 19 was to look for things that might provide some guidelines or some help as to how we deal with dealing with fights, as the title is. First off, I found a couple of passages that say fights are not good. Well, but they didn't tell us how to fix it. For example, 17:1, better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife.
Yes, true. Mm-hmm.
Amen, but that doesn't tell us how to stop the problem. And likewise with 19:13, a foolish child is a father's ruin. And a quarrelsome wife is like constant dripping of a leaky roof.
That's a famous proverb. Sorry, Linda.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll get my own back.
But then there were some statements that pointed in the direction of conciliation. 17:9, whoever would foster love covers over an offense, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends.
Wow. See?
17:17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. 17:28, even fools are thought wise if they keep silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues.
I love that one.
Casting lot settles disputes and keeps strong opponents apart. The role of a mediator. A person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. Mm-hmm. Now, it occurred to me, and we won't have time to go through this list very long, but I started making lists of the flip side of fools. Mm-hmm. In other words, fools do this, but what would happen if you wanted to act the other way? For instance, 17:10, a rebuke impresses a discerning person more than 100 lashes a fool.
That's one of my favorite proverbs in King James English.
Yeah.
Evil will never leave the house of one who pays back evil for good.
Yeah.
So you don't pay back.
Yeah, yeah.
Starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam. So drop the matter before a dispute breaks out.
Right. Mm.
An unfriendly person pursues selfish ends, and against all sound judgment starts quarrels.
There you go.
To answer before listening, that is folly and shame.
That's a powerful proverb. Sounds Solomonic to me.
Now, there's another one which we won't have time to deal with today, but it has to do with corporal punishment. Penalties are prepared for mockers and beatings for the backs of fools. So when you look at those bits and pieces, I think we do find some suggestions in Proverbs that would be helpful for dealing with fights. It's never easy, but that's, I think, part of our commitment as Christians.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thank you, Linda, for your participation today. And I want to thank also David Olson, our program engineer, and all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.